Is the runaway train that is college athletics finally going to be put back on the tracks by government intervention? That's what we're talking about today in reference to the Protect College Sports app. Obviously, you guys know this has been stealing headlines all week long. We took off last week and there's been some more developments, but now we're back and we're going to make some sense of this for you guys. What it is, how it affects FSU, how we feel about it, and does it actually have a chance to pass? So, Michael, it's good to be back. We had a hot topic fall right in our lap to talk about this week. There's going to be more football talk coming next week. But right now, man, this is a big picture topic that's been stealing the headlines. This is something that is really, you know, more than anything, I think a lot of us as fans have really just kind of been like, finally. Now, yes, it's still probably a slim chance it's going to pass, but most of us know that this just is not sustainable, and we want to see some guardrails come to college athletics. And this is what this bill aims to do. So this is what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, man, it's very interesting how this all works, and we're going to get into all the details of it. But the one thing I want to throw out to you, Jesse, really quick about this is that here's what's interesting about it. Basically, from what I've read and heard, that if it can pass in the Senate, it will most definitely pass in the House, okay? But the problem is you have Republicans who are actually really in favor of this law from everything I've read. They're actually really in favor of it. And you have Democrats who are not in favor of it because they feel like it doesn't give much more to the student athlete. But here's the issue. Most of the Republicans who are in favor of it are in the southern part of the country.
SEC country.
SEC country, where they don't like this law. Yeah. They don't like this law. And the Democrats who are against this are in ACC Big 12 countries or areas who want the law. So yeah. I think that's also an interesting thing as well, too. But I would be totally for this because, man, it get us back to like some semblance of what college football is supposed to all be about, college sports in general. And we're going to break that all down. So let's get into it.
Yeah, 1,000%. Now, up front, I do want to say, look, we don't talk about politics on the show. This nope. isn't about politics, nope. but it's a bill that was proposed by politicians. So there is some of that nuance that has to be mentioned, right? Right. And to your point, I do think this probably of all the bills has the best chance because yep. it was introduced anyway as a bipartisan bill. It has presidential right. support. It has a lot of support from the other conferences and things like that. So this does feel like it has a pretty, I don't want to say decent, but the best chance to pass of any bill that's made it through so far. There are some things, as you said, that we're going to mention in here where some people like it, some people don't, and for certain reasons. And there's also the fact that, you know, to your point, man, it's not a perfect bill, but it's right. something. And, right. and it gets us back to, you will never be able to put the genie back in the bottle, mm-hmm. right? It's never going to be Bobby Bowden's college football.
Correct.
It's just not. But this can stop the runaway wild west that college football and college sports, really athletics in general, has become. So we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about, you know, we're going to keep the politics as minimal as we can. As we always say with anything legal that we talk about, we are Twitter lawyers, not lawyers exactly. on Twitter. So we're going to exactly. do the best we can. We have some notes and things that we're going to be running off of to try and keep this on the straight and narrow as best we can. Now, before we jump into this, look, man, let me bring you a quick word from today's sponsor that is always great. No matter, we don't need Congress to get involved nope. in how great Alumni Hall is. So make sure that you guys check them out. If you're in Tallahassee, 1415 Timber Lane Road is the location. You can shop online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page. They got a ton of new stuff over there. So if you haven't been over there in a while, make sure you check it out. I'm actually getting ready to put in an order for myself coming up because, man, football season is less than 100 days away. Oof. And so whatever lucky shirt you had or hat or whatever, you need to replace
you it. Need a new one
because it is run out. It is empty. So make sure you check those guys out. And while you're over there, make sure that you save 10% with code SPEAR. So we really, really appreciate those guys supporting us and you guys supporting them. That's Alumni Hall FSU, code SPEAR to save 10%. So make sure that you check those guys out. They got all kinds of rewards, all kinds of you know, free shipping on certain orders and stuff like that. So again, make sure you check them out. You're going to buy the gear anyway. Look, we talk, you know, it's a rough time out here for Florida State fans right now, right? But we know we're still going to watch the games. We know we're still going to buy the gear. So make sure you do it somewhere that you're going to get great gear for the value. So check those guys out. So, Michael, let's get into this, right? Let's start with what is it? I mean, you hear a lot of these bills come out and, you know, anything that's related to the government is automatically confusing to start with. Right. So we're going to try and kind of break this down in layman's terms for you guys, because it had to be broken down in layman's terms for me to even understand it. So what it is to start with is, obviously, it was a bipartisan bill that was introduced by Senator Maria Cantwell out of Washington and Ted Cruz out of Texas. And it was co-signed by a couple of other guys there, one Republican, one Democrat, that was introduced just a couple weeks ago. And it's already been through one of their hearings. I'm sure most of you saw the clips of Nick Saban talking and the Notre Dame AD, amongst other people, talking about it. And so it's moving quickly. That is one thing to know. It is moving relatively fast in this. So, like you said, if they can get it to pass, I think it's the House, then the Senate. I'm not good at government.
Senate, then House.
Whichever one you get to pass through the first one, if you get it, you're probably there. But I have seen recently where they are working to adjust some things, right? Because the SEC and the Big Ten, which we're going to get to later, they are not in favor of this, because it does not behoove them. It is the thing that is working against them in a way. Basically, they're trying to rein these two conferences in. And so there are some things they still don't support it, but they actually just said, I think it was yesterday, that them, the leaders, Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti, had some conversations with Cantwell and with Cruz, and they're trying to come to a happy medium so we can support this, right? Now, the short version of what this actually is they're just finally trying to put some federal law behind the chaos that has been college athletics since NIL and the portal came about. Because, you know, you had the House settlement that came in. But the thing is, man, the way that was meant to be an NIL and all this stuff is not how it's being treated. Like, name, image, and likeness, let me just say, for me personally, I'm fine with the kids getting a portion of what they help bring in. There are billions of dollars in college football, and they should be able to get a cut of what they help bring in. They also should be able to maximize their NIL. Like, if they want to sign autographs and get paid for it, they should be able to do stuff like that. But what we have is not that.
Nope.
It is pay for play dressed in a facade that is NIL. You know, when you're talking about $50,000 an hour, I saw this the other day, $50,000 an hour for an autograph session, that probably doesn't even ever happen.
Correct.
We all know this is a sham. We all know it's just a, become a rich man's playground to try and build a national, to buy national championships. Yep. And the problem is, it's coming at the expense of other sports. You're going to start seeing the Olympic sports, women's sports, and all these things are going to start going away. Because at the end of the day, man, football is what rules the roost. And, you know, I was thinking about this earlier when I was watching the Texas Tech softball national championship. Like, it was a great scene out there. It was packed. Stadium was loaded. But it's also, like, as cool as that is, I guarantee you, either one of those fan bases, if you asked them, and this could go for a lot of schools across country, if you said, man, if we stopped funding softball and, you know, whatever Olympics, six, seven Olympic sports, and it meant that your program could win, say, two national championships in the next 6 years, most people would take that deal. Exactly. And so at the heart of it, you got to protect those sports too, because they're college athletes and they deserve that as well. Even if, you know, college football is the one that rules all of our hearts. So you get the House versus NCAA settlement, you get to be able to do the profit sharing. That was what, $20.5 million a year, I think schools were allowed to do. We're hearing reports of $40 and $50 million rosters this year. So obviously you are going way past that. And there's estimates that it's going to get up to $100 million before this is all said and done. So really what they're trying to do is to put some guardrails around this, because, you know, as it stands right now, the NCAA can't even enforce its own rules. And I think this is what brought, I'll kick back to you in a second on this, but this is what brought a lot of these conversations about is, you know, the NCAA has been toothless for a long time. And even the SEC and Big Ten are threatening to break away, because if we can't enforce rules, they're saying, well, we'll do our own thing where we can enforce our own rules, right? And so now the government is the one that has to step in because of the government in itself, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why when we go through some of the main points of this, the number one thing that this entire thing is built on is the antitrust shield for the NCAA to be able to enforce some of their own rules. Because as we all know, you've all heard, every single time the NCAA does anything, whether it be saying that Trinidad Chambliss can't play for Ole Miss, Tennessee, Tennessee, the thing that happened with them, Virginia, the thing that, like, every time something happens that goes against your program, well, what are you going to do? Exactly. You're going to go to a circuit court where the judge under his robe probably has your school's colors on, and he's going to rule that, well, that rule that you tried to enforce is not going to be enforced.
Right.
And so you can't enforce anything. Mm-mm. And I think everybody's tired of that.
Yep.
We've even heard it from ADs and from conference presidents and things like that, that that's the biggest problem. So I'll throw it back to you on this, Michael. But right now, what it really looks like is, before we talk about anything else, the antitrust shield is the crux of everything.
Yes.
Because once you can enforce your own rules, like the transfer portal, the NIL caps, these types of things, then you can finally bring structure to stuff. But as it stands right now, there is no structure because there is no rules. And even the rules you have, you can't enforce them.
Right. Well, the biggest thing is this. College presidents and universities still, even right now, now you have a few that are starting to waver on this, but for the longest time, it has been about amateurism. And they, and these universities do not want to make these athletes employees. Because you don't make them, because they don't want to make them employees, these schools are susceptible to antitrust litigation. So the biggest part of this bill is giving them antitrust exemption.
Yeah.
That would then allow them to regulate and enforce their rules. For the longest time, no one dared to sue the NCAA because it was like, you didn't think you'd win.
Right.
But then people started suing the NCAA, winning the cases. Obviously, it culminated in the House settlement, which was the biggest settlement against the NCAA. It's some billion, $2.1 billion, I believe it was, right? Which opened the door to now you have Brandon Sorsby at Texas Tech, who literally the NCAA rule says that if you gamble and you bet against your own team or bet on your own team, you're done. Your eligibility is over with. And now there's a I don't think it's going to happen, but he is right now suing the NCAA for reinstatement. And there's speculation out there that while they don't think the courts will uphold this, that they're fighting in Texas.
Yeah.
This could get all the way potentially to the Supreme Court of the United States for him to have a season. He's fighting for an injunction right now. But if Congress passes this law, then they would have antitrust protection, the NCAA would, to enforce that rule and not worry about getting sued. So that's the biggest thing about this law that would, or this legislation that would benefit college sports, is that once the NCAA handed down a determination on a rule, there would be no litigation because they have antitrust protection in that.
Yeah, and right now, from what we've seen, the trend is there really hasn't been anyone other than the NCAA. There really hasn't been anyone to stand up and say no to the players.
Correct.
Like it's been basically 100-0
correct,
in favor of ruling in the players. And so that's why you're seeing things run away the way that they have. And so if you can get to where you can finally enforce rules, then you can actually have rules to enforce, right? Because right now, whatever rule book, you might as well light the rule book on fire or use it as toilet paper, because right, it doesn't do any good if you can't enforce it. And like we right, said, you just go to your hometown judge, you get whatever you want done. So if it passes, that is going to be what allows everything else in the bill to become reality. And now right, some of those other things will run through. So obviously some of the hot ones that you've heard of are the one free transfer, and then you have to sit, right? So you would get the one-time transfer without penalty. If you did, again, a second time, you would be forced to sit out. Now, this is how it used to be, right?
Yep,
except you didn't get the one free one. You just had correct, to sit out. So there would be exceptions for things like a coach departure, a sport being discontinued, some other like niche cases of sexual or assault or harassment where you could still get those things. But basically, this free market, this free agency in college football would come to an end, right?
Right.
Which, don't get me wrong, man. Like I'm in favor of the portal because, you know, without the portal, Florida State wouldn't have even had 22 and 23. It's been good for, you know, not all the time for us, but I think it should be, you know what I mean? Like it's a tough thing, man, because I feel like a lot of the kids, when you commit, you should be there a minimum of say like 2 to 3 years, but situations change, right? A lot of us say you shouldn't be able to transfer and all that, but look, man, if you get hired at a job and that job sucks, you're going to leave. So how right, can I tell someone else that they can't do that? Because we know for a fact, we've heard this 100 times, that look, these guys, when they recruit, they're ruthless, right? They will yep, promise you the world to get you to commit. And then things are different when you get on campus. So I'm not saying that you should never be able to transfer, but this whole, like the Clemson situation with Ole Miss, which is something that's been in the spotlight of all right, this, where the guy is literally sitting in class being texted by another school, these things have got to change. Yep. You cannot have everybody changing, you know, every single year. And if you really do want to continue, which is kind of a sham nowadays, call it student athletes. I believe Nick Saban talked about this and some other guys where the more times that you transfer, it takes a big drop in the opportunity for you actually to complete your degree, right? Yep. Because you got credits and just how often, right? And all that type of stuff. So there is a couple sides of it, right? This is good to be able to hone this in a little bit, right? You still get that free transfer,
right?
And you can still transfer a second time if you want, but then you got to sit and you're going to be working up against that 5-year eligibility clock, which we'll talk about next. But that transfer rule is one of the top topics out of this whole bill.
Yeah, for sure. I really like this idea of the one free transfer. I do think it gives the players the opportunity because, you know, here's the thing. You're a 18-year-old kid. You're making this big decision about college. And if you're not an athlete, if you and I went to college and we're not athletes, right? Let's say we went to Florida State and I won't do that. Let's say we went to University of Florida and we're like, gosh, this is some weird stuff happening here. It sucks here, right? Well, for you and me, because we're not athletes, we can just leave. We can transfer to a new school and we can do that. But for athletes before that, it was really hard to be able to leave that school. And then if you did, you had to sit out for a year unless you had extenuating circumstances. You go back to I can't think of his name, the Ohio State quarterback who left Georgia.
Go ahead.
According to reports, he was severely harassed, which allowed Justin Fields, so allowed him to circumvent have to sit out a year, and he was able to like go to Ohio State and start there. So I understand that. So I like the one free transfer rule. Here's what becomes really unique about this rule. Right now, you go to Florida State, you don't like it, you transfer, you get on the market, right? They're paying out of the wazoo for you. Well, now, as a student athlete, you're going to have to be strategic about when you use your one free transfer. Because if you go somewhere your freshman year, don't play, and you're like, okay, I'm a transfer.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? These coaches now can pay you whatever they want because they know they got you. The leverage is all theirs now. That's why if I'm a freshman going in, I'm thinking, listen, I'm holding on to that one free transfer until I've maximized my market value, and then I'm going to transfer if I don't like my situation, because now I have all the leverage against the school I currently have versus the school that might want me. So that's what helps, I think. It gives coaches the ability to map out their rosters instead of year to year, which is what they're doing right now. It gives them the ability to at least go 2 to 3 years to map out their roster, because they can map, okay, all these people still have their transfer options. All these people don't have their transfer options. So now I know we got them, right? And then I think what needs to be clarified with this, and I'll throw this back to you on this, is they're saying it's one free transfer and then additional transfers would have limits with exceptions. The thing that got the NCAA in trouble is they had these exceptions, but then what qualifies as sexual harassment? What qualifies as sexual assault? Like, those things will need to be distinguished, and I don't mean to make light of them, but they need to be distinguished, because an athlete could say, you know, if I'm a softball athlete, well, this guy touched me inappropriately, so now I want to transfer. You know what I'm saying? Like, those things need to be defined. What is harassment? If I got called a loser because I missed the kick and a bunch of people blew up my social media and I got death threats, well, does that allow me to transfer? I think those things need to be defined to help so that you don't have this chaos of, well, I'm just sad, so I'm going to submit this exception so I can go play somewhere else. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, 1,000%. Because even back when the NCAA would allow some transfers before the portal was here, you know, for or eligibility things, for, they were not consistent on it, right? Correct. You would see a lot of things like, I remember there was a kid from Illinois, a tight end, who just wanted to transfer closer to home to be near his grandmother who had a terminal illness. And they're like, no, sorry, tough,
exactly.
You know, tough yeah. stuff. But then like someone's like, oh, you know, well, this guy looked at me wrong in the cafeteria. Oh, right. Yeah, sure, fine, go ahead.
Right.
And so to your point, yes, it has to be consistent in how they enforce this. And I also was thinking while you were talking, you made some great points that this will actually kind of help police a few other things, right? If you can't just transfer every single year, you know, because kids aren't going to want to sit out. So if you can't transfer unlimited amount of times, there's going to be less tampering in the portal because yep. they're like, look, this kid can't transfer or he's got to sit out anyway. I'm not going to offer you $4 million knowing you right. can't even play for me next Correct. Year. It's going to be good for the lower level where these kids can't just like, imagine being a G6 coach right now.
Yep.
One good season. Like it's almost like if halfway through the season, your best player, you want to bench him
yep.
in the second half of every game, because as soon as he looks out to be good, someone's going to come poach him. Yep. So I do think this would help police some of the other things as well. And I know that some people are like, well, you know, the coach can leave at any point. And I get that. Coaches are employees. If you want to do that with the players, then maybe that changes things there. You know, hey, I'm open to them paying some taxes on all this money they're right. getting.
And there's an exception for if a coach leaves, then you can leave.
Right.
And so, then one more point before I throw it back to you is that I just realized that I think you made without making is, This would re-emphasize high school recruiting
yeah.
again.
Yeah, yeah. And to your point, I think where, you know, the point that you said earlier where, you know, maybe you're not like, oh, I'm upset that I don't get to start as a sophomore or whatever. I'm not right. just going to jump in the portal because I don't get playing time right away. You're actually going to have to sit there and wait a minute and let mm-hmm. things flesh out for a little bit before you just jump in the portal looking for an opportunity. Because I know one of the things, and I can't remember if it was 30% or like 3,000 or whatever Nick Saban said, but there was a high amount of players that jump in the portal looking for a, you know, a bigger payday or something like that, and they never get another opportunity.
Correct.
And really, one of the great examples here is like Luke Kromenhoff.
Yep.
You know, this is a guy that I know they said that it was because of the system, but a lot of it was maybe because they brought in another quarterback, wasn't going to get to start, jumped to Mississippi State, another program that wasn't any good at the time, didn't start there. Now he's already on his third program. Like, I understand Florida State's not a great program right now. I get that. But had you awaited, you'd have been yep. the starter right now. Yep. And so you would have got your opportunity if you had just been patient. And I think this will help with that.
Yep.
Right. And so the next big thing that we'll talk about here is the 5-year eligibility clock. And athletes will get 5 years of eligibility beginning at age 19 or high school graduation, with the exception for things like pregnancy, religious mission, military service, and other approved absences. Because, you know, what did they say this year? There was like, I think 20 or 30% of the NFL draft was players that were over 24 yep. years old. That had a lot to do with why Indiana won last year, the yep. national championship. They didn't have the most talent-stacked roster, but they were all grown men out there right. playing football. And so when you're getting players now coming out of the G League to play in basketball, because again, you got to remember, guys, this is not just about football. These are right. all the sports we're talking about here. So you have to think about the fact that you're getting some of these guys, pros returning, that still have eligibility left. And these, you're getting 25 and 26 year old seventh year athletes competing against an 18 year old freshman. To me, this is a cleaner way to do it because, man, I tell you what, even just doing this, like talking about sports, it gets so confusing. I'm like, are you a redshirt senior? Are you a super senior? What, you know, you can't keep up with it anymore. And so I think the 5-year eligibility clock is good. You know, I don't know how they're going to work that in with the redshirt rule. Maybe they'll just give you 5 years to play and there is no more eligibility thing where the redshirt where you got to sit out or only get to play in 4 games. But I definitely think it's good to have something in place where you can't have 10-year age gaps, right? Now, obviously, yeah. if there's some extenuating circumstances, like I think BYU, all of their players have to take that religious mission the first year. So you may get an extra year there for things like that. But you're not going to have 25-year-olds, 26-year-olds in college football, littered in college football. Right. You might get the one or two exceptions in there, but you're not going to have that stuff anymore.
Right. Well, okay. So basically what happens is the red shirt is gone. So if they pass okay, this, good. Yes, there's no more red shirting. Like, you have 5 years to play 5 years.
I like that's that. It. I think that's good.
Yeah, so that's it. So, like, if Jesse Jr. went to Florida State for football, Jesse has 5 years, and he gets to play all 5 years, right?
Yeah, and, you know, now that you've allowed it, went from no playing time to 4 games, just let him play 5 years.
Right. Correct, right. So they can play 5 years. So by the time Jesse Jr. is 23, he's done. Now, when you think about like Chris Winkie, for instance, Chris Winkie went to play baseball.
Yeah.
He was there and then he came back. He would have 5 years, but those would be the rare exceptions. If Jesse Jr. went into the military service and served 4 years, right? So when he gets out, he's 22, he would have 5 years, but those are rare exceptions. The BYU, the Mormon, they rare exceptions. If you get pregnant as a sophomore, you would get an extra year that you lost from that, but that's it. Other than that, it's 5 years. Here's why I love this rule. One, college athletics was never meant to be a lifelong profession for student athletes. It's a development league. The idea is that you get developed in college, so with a chance to play professionally, right? But what's that ad that keeps running? 90% of NCAA athletes go on to major in or go on to do something else. They don't make it. It's 1% of college athletes who go professional. That's it.
Yeah, and now with NIL, how much you get paid, there's almost not a lot of incentive for kids to move on.
Exactly. And so it's like, no, you should not be 26 year playing against an 18, 19 year old in a development area of college. So I love it. You get 5 years to play 5 years and you get one free transfer in those 5 years. That's it.
Yeah. And so a lot of these have been really about the game itself and the things that are really running rampant right now. And the next one is one of the biggest, and that is a hard salary cap. This bill implements in response to some programs that are circumventing the $20.5 million revenue sharing cap through the things, again, that we talked about are dressed in NIL clothing, but it's like a wolf in sheep's clothing, but it's actually not. You know, some of these rosters are $40, $50 million coming up, and you're looking at the ones who are basically buying national championships. Now, there are going to be ways that you can still do this, right? Mm-hmm. It's just you're going to have to run all these deals through the NIL Go program, and they're going to have to actually be vetted and be legitimate business deals. So just because you have a $20.5 million cap doesn't mean you can't go over that. You can still have a $30 million roster, but you can't do this whole pay-for-play thing where it's just something that's disguised in a different type of deal. It's going to have to be a vetted deal. And I think that's good because, you know, again, man, we get back to the NFL example all the time. Like, in what world would anyone accept the AFC having a salary cap and the NFC having a salary cap that's $50 million more? No, exactly. You would never stand for that.
Competitive balance is out of whack.
Exactly. And that's what we have right now in college sports. So this is going to help bring that back to kind of a little bit more hard cap, with the exception that you can still do some NIL stuff, but it's going to have to be a little bit tougher to enforce those types of things. Now, there has been a lot of pushback on this by certain people, the players' associations and things like that, because the Democrats, because they feel like you're limiting what these players can get. But to me, and this is Jesse's personal opinion, right? I think a lot of it right now, the pushback on this is selfishness.
Yes.
Because it's give me what I can get now. I don't care about the future of the sport. And I get it, man. If you're a kid and you're a player and you want to make as much money as you can while you have that window of opportunity to make money, that's great. But what you don't realize is you're bankrupting the system long term. So your nephew, your cousin, your that freshman that's 4 years behind you in high school, they might not get that opportunity whenever the things go bankrupt. I mean, there was a report, I think, earlier this week or last week, where Louisville just came out and said that they were operating at a $30 million deficit last year. Yep. And they were getting a little bit of, you know, handouts from the school itself to help float the athletic department. But those are not coming anymore. And it's just not sustainable. Even a team in the SEC like Georgia, their president has come out, or athletic director has come out and said, guys, this is not sustainable. We can't do this way. You know, you're trying to get as much money as you can in football. You're not thinking about that softball player that's going to end up being a club sport in 5 years, right, or whatever. That's not going to get any NIL money. So to me, yeah, I get the pushback of, you know, hey, if you can earn, you know, $100 million in college, that's great. Go out and do it. I get that. But to me, this is the same problem, the greed and selfishness of why you're having conferences who are looking after themselves and don't care about the good of the sport. Right. You know, all that fluff that Sankey and them talked about, well, we do care. No, you don't.
You don't.
And granted, I get it. Your responsibility is not to the good of college sports. Your responsibility is to the good of the SEC or the good of the Big Ten. They're doing what's best. They're a CEO, and they're doing what's best for their company. Do you think that Coke would go, Pepsi sales are down a little bit this year. We should stop selling Coke so they can catch up.
Right.
No, they don't care about that. But again, you're going to bankrupt the system so future generations might not even get this opportunity. Right. So to me, the pushback on this is like, I get it, but man, if you want everybody to have this opportunity, you might have to take a little bit off the top because you're still going to get paid. And so to me, not only would that be a long-term good thing, but you're going to mitigate a little bit of the risk of bankrupting all of these programs, right? Because the salary cap, the $20.5 million we're talking about, that's revenue sharing. So you're going to get the money that these programs are bringing in. That money right. is there. But if you're talking about just a pure pay for play over top and being able to compete with these teams, there's a lot of schools in the country that just ain't got it like that.
Right.
And so to me, this is going to bring, you know, perfect example. We'll get to this later when we talk about Florida State and what it means for Florida State. We know NIL is maybe not as good as we thought it was at Florida State right now. And there's reason for that. And we'll talk about that later. But if you can't get there, up there, you can at least stop people from running away from you. And you can be kind of on a little bit more competitive balance. And so to me, between the transfer rule, the salary cap, and the antitrust protection, these are the three really, really big things in this bill that would help save college football in particular.
Absolutely. So here's the thing. I disagree with those who would say this rule would limit college student athletes from making more money. No. That's not what this does. This doesn't prevent college athletes from making more money. What this does is actually regulate how they're going to make this money. Meaning, yeah. Number one, the rev share was meant to give them a piece of the pie. That's it. Okay. NIL, name, image, and likeness, basically was designed so that a student athlete, so that Jesse Jr. could sell his name, image, and likeness to the local pizza shop, right? Because he's a recognizable player. People in that area are excited about Jesse Jr. And so if Pizza Temple says, hey, we have the Jesse Jr. deal, right? Well, Jesse Jr. is going to get a cut of that deal because they're using his name, image, and likeness, right? Okay, that's what NIL has been for. What it actually has become is that schools will say, well, Jesse Jr., we're going to give you $1 million from the revenue share, and then we're going to get this booster to give you another $1 million. And then we're going to get our collective that the fans have donated to give you another $1 million. So now here's a $3 million deal. And we're going to disguise this booster thing and this collective thing as you're going to take some autographs. You're going to show up for this ad. You're going to post this Instagram thing. And then we're going to say, hey, that's legit. No, that's not what it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
So Jesse Jr. can get $1 million from the school's revenue share, and then Jesse Jr.'s agent can go call Pizza Temple and Coca-Cola and Best Buy and, I don't know, something else and say, hey, Jesse Jr. is a big-time player this year. He's already featured on Heisman lists. He's already featured on Player of the Year list. Would you like to use him for your advertising? Then Coke and all them says, heck yeah, we're going to pay him $1.2 million. Then the agent has to submit that deal to the NIL Go. They will then have a system that says, actually, Jesse Jr. is worth $500,000, not $1.2 million. This is not a legit deal.
Yeah.
Right? That's how it's supposed to be designed. Because here's the thing. In pro football, if Matthew Stafford, the quarterback of the Rams pay him his salary, Coca-Cola, to pay Matthew more so that they can convince Matthew to come to the Rams in free agency. It doesn't work that way. We shouldn't do that because what we're doing is we're creating an unsustainable competitive balance. So the reason why the SEC and the Big Ten are against this is because they feel like, well, we have the advantage with all the money we get. And if we have to regulate this, it prevents us, and I know we'll talk about this later with the pooling of the media rights, it prevents us from being able to have the most money. That's not what this is supposed to be. This is supposed to be that the revenue share acts as a cap, and then the school could help set up deals with other NIL partners, but they're not getting booster money and all this to help sweeten deals for kids to come. I actually think this is good for college football. Mm-hmm. I think it creates better competitive balance. That way you don't have one conference dominating every year. You don't have one team dominating every year, because let's be real. If the New England Patriots won every single year for the next 10 years, the Super Bowl, the NFL ratings would go down significantly.
Yep.
Because no one wants to see the same team dominate. Well, the same true is for college football.
Yeah. And the only reason you've seen parity in college football is look at the boosters directly tied to the programs that are winning, right? Yep. Indiana, I know Cignetti's a miracle worker of a coach. It also helps you got Mark Cuban in your corner, right?
Exactly.
So to your point, yeah, man, I think it's a great thing, because it's not saying you can't go earn unlimited money. It's saying you actually have to earn that unlimited money. You can't just be paid for play by some rich booster. Like if Jeff Bezos owns Pizza Temple, you know what I mean? Like, and he wants to funnel that. It's money laundering. That's exactly all it really is.
Exactly.
And so it's just stopping that. So the things are there. The opportunities to earn above the cap are still there.
Right.
It's just enforcing them so they're not inflated, so you're not basically money laundering into a college football roster.
Right.
And again, I'm not against the kids if they have that. You know, Jameis Winston could have probably signed $1 million deal with Publix after the crab legs thing, right? But he wasn't allowed to then. And he should have been allowed to do that. But just to be like, oh, I'm going to give him $5 million and say that he's doing a commercial for my Pizza Temple place that does $1 million in sales a year.
Right.
That's not a legitimate business deal. And so we're going to bring that back in. You'll still have some schools that will have stronger, you know, in bigger markets. Like imagine, UCLA in the LA market. Oof. You have a big opportunity in there versus, you know, Kansas or something like that. But it's going to keep it from just being pure out pay for play funded by billionaires and rich boosters and all that, and collectives and all that stuff. So that to me is a great thing for the sport. It's what's really got to happen, to your point, to bring a competitive balance. Now, a couple of other rules that are big here. One, obviously the funny one, is the Lane Kiffin rule. That is literally named the Lane Kiffin rule. Basically, this is a quick one. It just prohibits coaches from dipping on their team midseason. You can still do it, but you can't go work for the other school essentially until the season is over. You can't do recruiting. You can't do roster management. You can't do these NIL deals and game planning for another program until the season is basically over. You cannot do that. So it would at least entice the coach to finish the season. Like, you started with this team, you promised these kids and all this thing, you can't just high and dry them. So this is a pretty quick one. But yeah, man, the Lane Kiffin rule is funny, but I think it's good, because it was, you know, it was really kind of dirty the way he did that last year. And I understand taking the LSU job over Ole Miss. 1,000% understand it. And I understand once you're on the clock, they're paying you. The one thing I would say with this particular rule here is, I think if this were to pass, I think one of the other things that needs to be worked on is the college football calendar. We need to space this out a little bit, to where you give these coaches time, you know, you eliminate the transfer portal until after the season's over, and like, okay, you're not at a competitive disadvantage by finishing the season with that team. You can let the season play out. And that goes for coordinators too. Like, you can let the season play out and then get to work on your roster. You're not going to be sitting there like, oh, well, I got to leave now because I have to start recruiting. I have to start doing all this stuff, because the college football calendar is so crazy and so condensed in a way that does not make this a good, easy to do, right? So I think that is something that needs to be paired with this if this passes.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I think the issue with this, and I'll make this quick, is, the Lane Kiffin rule, it's crazy that, you know, the coaches can lead their midseason. So this would help with that. But here's the issue. Let's just be real about this. Let's use Lane Kiffin. Let's say he got offered the LSU job. He's in the midst of a playoff run with Ole Miss. Let's say he decides to take it, but he can't leave. Okay. He can't leave Ole Miss to go to the LSU job, but he can agree that he's going to take the job. He can publicly announce it, or they can stop. The thing is, the media pressure is going to drive for an answer for this to happen, right? Even if you make the portal at the end of the year, let's just put our chips out on the table. Programs are already contacting agents in the middle of the year.
Yeah.
It's literally game three, and agents are already hearing from other programs about, hey, do you think your guy's going to be available in the portal? You think your guy's going to want to transfer? Now, with the one-time transfer rule, this should clean up some of that. But still, if they're able to still transfer, You're already, this is why, this is one of the things that really ticks me off about Florida State, because Michael Alford and them were trying to play by the rules. Oh, don't contact, don't reach out. They're already making contact with these agents, right? So they're saying, oh, this bill is going to help with like the tampering rule. It's not, because you don't contact the player, you contact the agent. And there's no rule against contacting the agent at any point during the year. So it's our, these deals are already being worked out early in the season. So my whole point in saying this is like, I don't really understand how this Lane Kiffin rule is really going to help with some of that. All it's going to help is just to keep the coach at the school until the end of the year. I also don't see how the calendar will help with that, because you can put the transfer portal at the end of the year. You can put all that at the end of the year. Guess what? Game three, I'm calling somebody at Georgia. Hey, you think your linebacker is going to want to go in the portal? I know it's only game three, but we like what we see so far.
Yeah.
We're offering him a $10 million deal.
Yeah, I think you would need to move signing day at a minimum. Early signing period needs to be moved back a little bit. And I think the way that you would help this is twofold, right? If it's kind of like the whole thing has to pass for it to give it to any things in what I'm talking about there. If the transfer rule is there, now granted your coach is leaving, so that gives you an extra transfer, right?
Exactly.
But also some of the NIL stuff. Like if you have to vet a legitimate deal, well, if I own Pizza Temple in Tallahassee, I'm not going to sign up to pay this kid a deal until I know he's coming, right?
Right.
Because I'm not going to give money that someone that's going to go sign somewhere else. So yes, you can talk to their agents, but you also have to be like, okay, we know for a fact he's coming here now. Like you probably, I don't know that you can have those conversations till the season's over, because you don't know the changes that are going to happen, right? So I feel like everything has to happen to really be able to enforce this. This is the one that did get a little bit of kind of a laughing look at, because like, how can the government control what a coach gets to do? That's a little bit weird. But I don't disagree with them trying to circumvent that happening again, because it kind of was unfair to the Ole Miss players last year. Now, the next one that is really big, and the next two, and we're going to try and kind of speed this up a little bit so we don't run you too long here, but the next two are two of the other really, really big ones. And number six point here is pooled media rights. Now, there's an asterisk next to this, and that it is optional. So schools would have the option to pool their media rights collectively if 75% or more of FBS institutions vote in favor. If they choose to pool, they would be, you know, they would have to agree to this. And this is why the SEC and Big Ten are so pissed off about this thing. Yep. This is why they won't agree to this. Now, I got to thinking about some math on this, right? And 75% of 138 or whatever it is really darn close. So if you take Notre Dame out of this, the rest of the country could have essentially invoked the right to say it, because it's literally like 103 and a half teams is what you need. With Notre Dame included in that, you could get to 104. But that doesn't mean you can make the SEC and the Big Ten agree to this, because it's still optional. Even if you vote at 75%, it is still optional for you to, yes, it is 100% optional. You do not have to agree to work your, to split your pool, to pool your revenue, right? Even if, like, you can't strong arm the SEC and the Big Ten into doing this. You can vote the 75%, but those conferences still have to agree to this. And I was like, because I actually, when I was doing my notes, and I was like, well, wait a minute, couldn't you, in a sense, strong arm these two conferences into doing it? And the notes I had on that was that, no, you can't. It's still optional that they have to, you know, agree to join in this. And so the reason that they don't want to do this, and for those of you who might not understand fully what pooled media rights means, is right now, every conference basically goes out and shops its media rights to television networks independently. That's why you have ESPN over here with them, Fox over here with them, CBS over here with them. But what pooling media rights would do would be everybody collectively comes together and agrees to pool their media rights and sell it as one big package. And I've heard estimates that are crazy, something like this could be worth like $9 billion or something like that. But what pooling media rights does, and why the Big Ten and SEC don't want to do this, is because it's going to limit them. They are going to be the cash cows, the golden gooses that are going to help bring up paydays for the ACC, the Big 12, the G6, and things like that. Because right now, like, let's be honest, man. If you have a Georgia versus Alabama, you know, a Texas versus LSU or something like that, from a TV perspective, that is worth so much more money than Wake Forest versus Virginia or FIU versus Georgia State or something like that. So what it essentially does is Wake Forest or Florida Atlantic now gets to basically get more money because of the Georgia-Alabama high-ticket items, right? They get to kind of profit off of that because everybody's pie is coming out of the same pan instead of everybody having a different one. So that's why the SEC and Big Ten don't want to do it, because they don't want to be the ones to have to kind of basically supplement the lower conferences that don't earn the same money. That's why the lower conferences want to do it, because it's the one way that they can catch up to those schools and get a revenue increase. Now, the thing is, let's say that you get to the 75% vote, but the SEC and the Big Ten says, well, I don't want to be a part of that. Well, the ACC and the MAC and all these, they could agree to pool their rights, right? But that doesn't behoove the ACC and the Big 12, because then you're going to be the cash cow and you're going to be paying for this. So to me, and correct me if I'm wrong on the optional thing, but I'm pretty positive that you still have to opt in. Even if it gets to a 75% vote, it's not mandatory. The problem is the two conferences that are collecting the most money don't want to do it because they don't want to supplement the other conferences. So the only way this turns out to be a net positive for everybody is if everybody decides to do it together. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they're still going to be at the top. The other schools now, the ACC and the Big 12, would be at an even more disadvantaged state, because if you pool with the G5, now you have to supplement their income as well. So it kind of needs to be everybody. And that's why the Big 10 and the SEC are like, no, we're not. We are. This is the one thing that they are against more than anything else.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I when I was studying it last week, I missed a part about that little line about it's voluntary. So you're right. So,
and I will say one quick thing on that too. I was doing some more reading on this morning. There's a lot of things that are tied to pooling media rights in this bill, like a lot of athlete protections, the scholarships and things like that. Those don't get enacted unless you pool your media rights. So that's a really, really big part of this bill.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So for sure. This is the biggest contention of the SEC and the Big Ten. They do not want this. And this is why they're lobbying Congress or Senator Cantwell and Senator Cruz on this, because they want this out of the bill. Because if this were to happen, like you said, this would then put 75% of college D1 104 schools against the SEC and Big Ten. And now you're left out of inventory, because they're not going to play you. If they pull their rights, well, then you're not a part of this. You don't get that money. You're out of that. Now you're left with limited inventory for yourself as well, too. And these other schools then get all this big pie. And like you said, the numbers I've seen are just
astronomical. It's astronomical. Crazy.
It's crazy money. And so I can understand this. I also would say, though, that let's say the 104 schools did, and the SEC, you know, well, it's a legal threshold. They don't. The problem is, if they did this, they would have immense pressure from Congress, from all the other in-state fan schools, from their own fans. Why aren't you a part of this? From even ESPN. If, let's say, all of these schools did this, well, now, because the college football playoff has to include those other schools, well, guess what? Now ESPN has to do a deal with the college football playoff with this 75% pooled media. Yeah. Which would then leave out the SEC. Fox would have to do a deal with the 75% pool media, which would leave out the Big Ten, right? And so, like, that's why this is a really big deal to the SEC and the Big Ten. Do I like it? I don't know. Like, I'd have to see it come to fruition for it to happen. The other side of this, and I don't know if you were going to get to this, is that actually I think you were going to get to this, so I'll wait on that. But this would be a big deal, and I think if I'm the SEC or I'm the Big Ten, there's it's no wonder why they're there trying to lobby against this. But I also think Congress shouldn't just bow down to them. I think Congress,
right?
Okay, what is best for overall sport?
Yeah,
10 and the SEC have a unfair, and I don't mean, we live in a capitalistic society, so hey, the strongest survive, I get that. But when you create, the reason why we have rules against monopolies in this country is because what happens then is that if McDonald's is the only fast food entity out there, they can set their prices. They can gouge us all they want, right? That's why we have gas rules and all like that. Well, the same needs to be true for college sports. This is why we do that in the NBA and the NFL, so that there isn't this unfair competitive balance, that every school has the opportunity to compete.
Yeah, and every other sports, whatever you want to call it, does this. NFL, NBA, MLB, everybody does this because it's just one big pie. You know, basically what it, if you want to break it down into a quick explainer, is a rising tide lifts all ships.
That's right.
Right now, the Big Ten and the SEC are like a tidal wave, and they don't want to lift any other ships. Mm-hmm. I think even Greg Sankey said something about, like, why are we being penalized for being successful? Well, the problem is it wasn't quite fair how you got successful. Correct. Like, ESPN funded your conference heavier than it did the ACC. Fox jumped on the Big Ten and at the cost of the Pac-12, and they allowed you to kill these other conferences and run away with that. And then you expanded and took all their biggest brands because you had those deals behind you. Exactly. And so now Congress is kind of saying, whoa, 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 whoa. If you're going to do that, we need to make this fair for everybody. And so it's not just the big brands. And then, you know, Senator Cruz talked a lot about, like, okay, yeah, Texas and Texas A&M, and they'll be fine. But what about Baylor? What about TCU? So that's really what it comes down to, is a rising tide lifts all ships, and the Big Ten and the SEC don't want to lift the other ships.
Yep.
And I understand why they don't want to do that, because, again, their priority is to make their conferences better, not everybody else. But in order to have competitive advantage, yeah, man, this is kind of what really needs to happen. This is what stops you from running away, because they're talking about, you know, the revenue gap's going to be $40, $50 million in just a matter of a couple of years. This is how you stop that, is pooling of media rights. And if not everybody agrees, then there's really no point in doing it. So really the funny thing is, there is a little bit of a vibe coming out of this in the political side, where it kind of seems like it's a witch hunt against the SEC and the Big Ten.
Yeah.
So to us who are not in the SEC and the Big Ten, that's good. And you see a lot of their fans come out like, oh, it's the poor kids crying again. And it's like, well, man, I get it. But like, if your team, if your school, if you're a Texas fan, oh, the poor kids are crying again. If your school was still in the Big 12, mm-hmm. you'd be crying too.
Exactly.
And so it's not that you don't want those leagues to do better. It's just when you're kind of being, when you are able to hungry hippos all the best teams, and you're being fed by the largest networks, unlimited amount of fertilizer to grow, that's not fair to the other conferences, right? And so you're leaving them with a subpar product, and that's what they're being priced with. So yeah, if Florida State gets to the SEC or the Big Ten, no, you probably don't care whether this happens or not, because it doesn't matter. You're getting the big piece of the pie now. But as a college football fan, if you remove your team's logo, pooling of media rights is the single best thing for competitive balance in college sports.
Yep.
Point blank, period. Now, the next one we're going to talk about is the other really big one here, and that is no super leagues.
Yep.
So this bill will prevent any conference earning more than $1 billion in revenue on its 2025 tax returns, basically the Big Ten and the SEC. It's a direct shot at them because they're the only ones that qualify. Now, the ACC is getting up there. I think they were like $800 million last year. So they're actually growing their revenue. But basically, it would make it structurally illegal under this bill for them to break away and do a super conference. Now, I was reading on this morning. Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti from the Big Ten and the SEC have both come out and said, look, there is no plans for them to merge, right? There is no plans for them to create some super league. So they're kind of pushing back on this, like, this isn't even an option for us right now. But that doesn't mean they still can't expand, right? That doesn't mean, like, the SEC, Sankey came out and said that they were not planning on expanding anymore.
Yeah.
We heard that when they didn't want Texas and Oklahoma, exactly. And then they took them anyway. The Big Ten, they still said they're open to expanding, because obviously we think, you know, Florida State mm-hmm. wants to be involved mm-hmm. in this. And so really to me, man, I think the no super league is kind of a good thing. Because that's where you get to what I just talked about with Senator Cruz talking about Baylor and TCU. If it's a super league, you might get left out, right? And so what this means for Florida State is this is really a twofold reaction to what this means to Florida State when you talk about from a no Super League perspective, because you want to be in the Super League if it were to happen, right? You would want them to say, okay, the Big Ten and the SEC are going to merge. You know, while we're in the process, we're going to go ahead and snap up Notre Dame and Clemson and Florida State and Miami. If that seat's not at the table,
yeah,
you don't want this to happen, because then you get regulated to basically junior high football, right?
Correct.
You get to be in the everyone else league. And so I think this is good at protecting a lot of the other schools, like a Louisville, like a Wake Forest, like an NC State. This would protect them from being basically put at the kids' table.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when you look at this, so this is the 2025 fiscal year covering the 2024 football season. The Big Ten brought in $1.47 billion, with Ohio State bringing in the highest at $91.6 million. The SEC brought in $1.11 billion, with Georgia bringing in the most at $74.5 million. ACC, $826.5 million, with Clemson having the most at $55.1 million. The Big 12 brought in $610.9 million, with the highest payout was $39.5 million. Okay. Like, no wonder everybody wants to get into the super leagues.
Yeah.
The Big Ten.
And no wonder these two conferences don't want to pool their media rights.
Exactly. Because look at all the money they're making. Now, the Big Ten has for long, I mean, everyone's known this. They want to create a national league, right? That's where Florida State, Clemson, Miami comes into play. That's why they're being talked about with the Big Ten. The SEC wants to say regional, and they don't want the Big Ten in. That's why they're trying to say, supposedly, they're staying from the Super Conference. The only way I would agree to something like this, meaning not that I have a decision making, but the only way I'd be okay with it is if you are able to pool the media rights and now you get equal distribution. Until then, no. Do not take away the Super League, because we want to be in the Super League.
Yeah. Yeah. It just depends on whether you get a seat at the table or not, exactly. Whether you're in favor of this or not. So, yeah. And a couple of other things here. And I will say that the SEC and Big Ten have talked about kind of teaming up, where, like, okay, if we can't merge, we can at least team up, because they were saying that, you know, the argument right now, who's the best conference in college football is good for the game.
Yeah.
And maybe it is. And their kind of version of this was, Petiti was saying this, was, look, us going in favor of the 2014 playoff gives the other teams, the other conferences, more opportunities to be included in this conversation. And maybe that's the case, but come on, man. You know they're going to load it with Big Ten and exactly. SEC teams. Anyway, these conferences are going to throw their weight around to get what they want regardless. And again, this conversation might sound totally different if Florida State was in the SEC or the Big Ten.
Yep.
But the reality is, it's not even just about us. There's a lot of other programs. When you talk about the good of college football, that's not for necessarily the good of Florida State. Like,
right.
Obviously, we're focused on the good of Florida State, but there's a lot of other programs that are involved in this that would kind of get put to the kids' table if this stuff doesn't happen, because a lot of these schools can't afford to keep up right now anyway, as right. It is. And so some of the other things that we'll just kind of make quick work of here is another big point is athlete protections.
Yep.
You got things where scholarships cannot be reduced or revoked because of athletic performance, injury, illness, or roster management. Basically, they can be like, hey, look, you can play. You just can't play here.
Right.
You guaranteed me a scholarship. You know, there was some things I heard where, like, I forget what school it was. The Colorado with Deion, matter of fact, mm-hmm. where these kids were offered scholarships on scholarship. And then Deion gets there and is basically like, look, man, your scholarship ain't good here anymore.
Right.
And that's not right. You know what I mean? That's just not right. And then there's also you guarantee the scholarships. There's medical coverage for sports-related injuries that extend past your final year of competition and things like that. So it also caps agent fees at only 5%, and they have to be vetted because the agent market is just crazy right now. These guys are seeing dollar signs, and they're ripping the kids off at their expense. You're getting bad advice. We see this a lot happen. What Rodney Hill was a victim of that. You know, this is one of those perfect examples that relates to Florida State. So that's a big one there. Also, student athlete representation, where one third of an athletic association governing boards would have to be former student athletes. So they would get a voice. And, you know, a big part of this is going to end up being collective bargaining.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people are saying, well, why would they want to collective bargain? They're kind of getting the runaway right now. But it's like, man, if you could kind of guarantee your seat at the table and what you're going to get and define your terms ahead of time, it's like playing poker. You know what I mean? Right. Like you could, or like a parlay. You know what I mean? When they're like, would you like to cash out now? Mm-hmm. And if you're like, no, I'm going to wait. And then it don't hit, you get nothing. So, right. You could kind of control your future by doing the CBA right now. But man, obviously, as we get ready to transition into the legal side, what it means for Florida State and wrap this thing up, you know, again, it's whether this thing passes or not. That's the big thing, right? Mm-hmm. The antitrust thing is going to be the hardest thing to get to pass over on this. But to me, again, like there's going to be some changes in this. I have a feeling they're going to rework this bill a few times. They're probably going to give a little bit based on what the Big Ten and the SEC want. They're like, okay, if I give you this, will you actually play along, right? Mm-hmm. And those things may happen. But I think if this bill as a whole can pass, I think it would be a good first step in saving college athletics. It's not perfect. Mm-mm. But what we have right now is far from perfect. And so I think this really would make a big difference.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would make a big difference. The one thing I would hope is that Congress doesn't bend to the Big Ten and the SEC.
Yeah.
Because bending only creates more chaos, right? If you have two leagues who can still dictate what, like right now, they control. Those two leagues control the playoff and who gets in, basically. I mean, no one wants to believe it, but let's be real. They do. So that's my one hope. Other than that, yes, I think this is a great start to saving college football.
Yeah, 1,000%. And so will it actually pass? That's the hard part, man. Mm-hmm. You're going to have some arguments over this. You're going to have some – there's going to be a lot of legal challenges. There's probably going to be a lot of lawsuits you're going to have to fight through if it does, you know, to do all these things. Every other bill that you've tried has been shot down very quickly. Yep. So it's not possibly – it's not a good possibility, right? But I wouldn't say that it's a 0% chance, right? I've heard it say kind of right now it's 50-50 if they're willing to work on some concessions and things like that. But again, you got bipartisan support, you got presidential support, you got a lot of people coming out speaking in favor of this thing. So again, man, it really comes down to like the Big Ten and the SEC problem. That's really what this comes down to is,
as always,
is they have given them enough outs by like the pooling media rights being optional and all these things, that even if this happens, there could be ways for them to circumvent the process and not necessarily do that. So they're going to oppose it. They're going to throw their weight around, to your point, with all that stuff. But, man, you have got to be able to get everybody online for this thing and everything doing, everyone pulling in the same direction. And then it would be good. Because, again, right now the problem is, and Nick Saban talked about this too, like having someone in place that's almost like a Roger Goodell for college football. Because right now it's being left up to the Greg Sankeys and the Tony Petites and the Jim Phillips. And these guys have no incentive to do what's good for the game. They have what's incentive to do what's good for their universities in their conference. That's why they are operating the way they are now. And so you need something to be able, a centralized governing body to be able to pull things in. Like, hey, man, I get what you're doing for the SEC and it's great for the SEC, but it's not good for the rest of college football. So, you know, you could be like, if you had a president of the AFC South, and he's figured out this way to loophole some things. It's like, oh, chill, man. We're still the NFL. Like, I'm glad you're doing great things for the AFC South. Right. We're still the NFL, man. We still got to look out for everybody here. So just real quick, man, what does this really mean for Florida State specifically, right? How does this really relate? If you're a Florida State fan and you're sitting here like, I just listened to an hour of this. What the hell does it mean for Florida State, right? There's a couple of things, you know, again, depending on what conference Florida State ends up in the long term. But I think a couple of the real big ones that we'll hit on right now is the revenue gap problem is the number one thing that it would help solve for you, right? If you were able to pool the media rights, we talked about this before, that kind of closes that revenue gap that's only growing right now in college sports, right? This is one where you would get to be able to be lifted by when you play the LSUs, you would get lifted by Alabama, Georgia. You would get lifted by Big Ten, big brands like Michigan and Ohio State playing. That would help you make more money.
Right.
Instead, right now, we feel like, you know, honestly, we're the Big Ten and the SEC of the ACC, if that makes sense. We're like, we're being dragged down by your primetime game, you know, this week might, when Florida State's off this week, might be Louisville versus Syracuse, right? That's just not bringing the same amount of money. So if you can pull media rights, it would be huge for Florida State. It would really, really help them close that revenue gap. Now, again, at the same time, if you end up realigning and getting drawn into the Big Ten or the SEC, you may not be in favor of that because that means you're going to be limiting things a little bit there as well. But you're still going to be getting a bigger payday either way. Right. You're not going to be left behind. And then also the hard cap would be huge, right?
Yep.
Because we know, to our point earlier, Florida State's NIL isn't where we need it to be, mm-hmm. right? Now, there's a lot of reason for that. Mike Norvell, again, we use the analogy all the time. Like, if you were investing with a banker and they lost you money 4 out of 6 years, would you be really willing to give more of your money to that
exactly.
guy? That's Mike Norvell right now. You know, again, if you were to – like, we were just talking before the show about James Franklin and Virginia Tech and the $75 million gift that they just got. And I don't know who's got $75 million laying around other than the Spanx lady, but – if you were to put in place a coach that you actually believed in, Florida State's NIL would go way up. But if you can't go up, the next best thing you can do is keep everybody from running away. And so a hard cap would at least be like, okay, we can do $20.5 million.
Right.
We can do $30.5 million if you're talking about going through legitimate NIL deals, not just purely pay for play. You wouldn't have to worry about competing against LSU with a $40 million roster necessarily. That's purely pay for play, the Texas Techs of the world. You would at least bring them back down to your level. That's huge. And then we already talked about the Super League where, you know, that just depends on which seat of the table you're getting at, right? Yeah. If you don't get into the Super League, it's terrible for you. So you would want that ban. If you right. were going to get into it, then, you know, it doesn't really matter for you either right. way. And then the last thing I'll say here, man, is for Florida State, obviously you have the transfer rule. You know, again, I think it would help you from losing a lot of players, help you build a program. This is not just good for Florida State. It's good for everybody.
Right.
You can build a roster consistently over years. You wouldn't necessarily lose a lot of guys in the portal from being enticed and things like that. So now Florida State, again, has been built heavily from the portal. So this right. this would be almost like the anti-Mike Norvell rule. But, right. you know, hopefully we're not dealing with that in a few years anyway. So, yeah, man, that's really, to me, that's really as a Florida State fan, that's what it really comes down to, right, is – more emphasis on high school recruiting and roster building. You know, you could actually buy a jersey again with a player's name on it because he might be here. Not
he might be here.
Might be here for a couple years. The revenue gap of you having to play Florida at the end of the year where they're making $40 million a year, that's probably going to go away if you pull your media rights.
Right.
Having to compete against Miami, who's got a $44 million roster this year from what I've heard, that's going to limit that just a little bit, right? So it's just – it's a competitive advantage for Florida State. And we know Florida State has done a lot with a lot less for a long time. So it would just kind of help you bring back that where right. the brand cachet actually matters. The location right. actually matters. It's not just who has the most money.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with all those. I think for Florida State, you know, the biggest thing is you don't, if you're not going to get an invite into the Super League, you don't want this banning of the Super League because you want to be in that conversation. You want to be in that league. You already have, according to speculation, that's scuttlebutt that's been around for several years now. You already have a invitation to the Big Ten as soon as you get much closer to the end date of the grant of rights deal. So you don't want to lose that, right? You want to be able to get in there. I think for high school, I think for the portal thing, it helps you find a coach who's going to re-emphasize high school recruiting to the maximum. For the NIL potential, this is going to help you be able to kind of level the playing field in some ways against your rivals, Clemson, Florida State, or Miami and Florida, as well as Georgia, because you're all in that same kind of recruiting bed there with Alabama and all them. So I think this could, I think a lot of these rules that could be put in place will help your program. I think there are a few rules that if put in place and you're still in the current state that you're in,
yeah.
could really harm your program.
Yeah. 1,000%. And don't get me wrong. There's a lot of things that Florida State has to fix in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
But these are things that structurally, when you look at the entire picture, could definitely help you. So that's really our main thoughts, man. I don't know if you have anything else to add on all of this, but I think we at least laid it out in a way that you guys could understand what it means for Florida State and just get a decent picture of what may be coming.
Right.
Again, this is not a guarantee, but this seems to have the most support of any bill that has tried to fix college football or college athletics before. So
right.
that's going to be it for today, guys. We are going to wrap it up here. Like I said, we'll be back next week with some football talk. We already have some stuff planned. Hopefully some more news will break and we got some things to talk about. But in the meantime, if you enjoy these conversations, these shows, these episodes that we do, we would greatly appreciate a like and subscribe. We've actually seen a pretty good bit of growth through the last two episodes. We are pushing that 3,000 subscriber mark that we have been trying to reach. So, man, this is as much about you guys as it is about us. So if we could get you guys to jump on the train with us, go ahead and hit that like and subscribe button. Hit that notification bell so you never miss an episode. It would mean the world to us. It's free. It doesn't cost you a thing. It really does make a difference for the show. So we appreciate that. Also, make sure you check out our website at plantthespear.com. We got all kinds of written articles, all our videos, all our podcast episodes can be found there as well. So make sure you check that out. We've been doing some upgrades, some remodeling over there. Got some new features for you guys that I think you're going to enjoy. Some more updates are coming. I got some bugs to fix. But man, there's a lot of content over there as well. And the one thing that we have been hinting at for a long time, Michael, the cat is almost out of the bag.
Come on now.
I'm hoping within the next week or two to finally share this big news that we've been on, something we've been working on that will hopefully change a little bit of the way the fan community operates here around Plant the Spear. So really excited about that. Some of you guys who are channel members and things like that, you might be finding out here in the next couple of days, in the next week or so, as I'll probably be reaching out to you guys about it ahead of time. So now's as good a time as any to jump on board with Plant the Spear. We appreciate you guys watching, and we'll catch you on the next one. As always, go Knowles.